food is fuel. I think there's a tendency as life goes on and we end up with a little more time and sometimes a little more money that we end up altering our diet in a way that isn't perhaps as healthy as it might be. And right now there's a huge amount of knowledge that's around and a lot of new knowledge in terms of what's healthy and what's the proper way of eating and conducting your life. You've at least exposed me to what I should be doing. To my chagrin, you remind me altogether too often about that. Hence, that's why I call you Dr. Killjoy.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people kind of like you. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it, that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. So today's interview was a little bit different. I had the opportunity to sit down with one of my entrepreneurial heroes, Murray Walker, also known as My Dad. And as I sat at the beginning of this podcast and put together a list of people that I would ultimately like to interview, he was actually top of the list. He is the reason that I went into business. He is the person who sculpted so much of my way of thinking, and he is, in short, my entrepreneurial hero. So I thought there's no better way to honor Father's Day and the individuals in our lives who have made an influence in terms of where we are today and how we got there, than to sit down and actually interview him for a podcast that is about entrepreneurship and health. I got to ask him about business, and I also got to ask him what he's learned from me about health along the way. It was tremendously insightful. I learned things that I actually never even knew from his perspective before. We talked about opportunity. We talked about taking things to the next level, balancing our time, and putting things into perspective. This is actually an incredibly impactful and value-driven podcast. It meant so much to me to do it. I can't wait to share it with you. So this is kind of a unique experience. Dad, welcome to the podcast.
Nice to be here.
So what's kind of cool about this is not only is this you haven't really listened to podcasts before, but you've never been a guest on a podcast before. And I think this is kind of neat that it's your first opportunity when we're hanging out together on the Entrepology Podcast.
Good to do it.
All right. So here's what we're going to do. I wanted to have an opportunity to talk to one of my biggest entrepreneurial heroes and mentors, which is you. And I talk to people about entrepreneurism all the time, and I tell them all these stories about all these things we used to do. And I thought, wouldn't it be kind of cool if we actually just had a conversation? And I had a chance to ask you about some of your thinking and why you chose to make those decisions. Because I think one of the great tragedies is that we have all these kids in schools these days who don't necessarily have an opportunity or an outlet to let these inherent entrepreneurial skills shine. And I think there's such a neat opportunity for parents to recognize that and foster that. And I'd love for us to look at that today. So when did you know that you were an entrepreneur?
I think I realized it probably long after I became an entrepreneur. In some ways, it's sort of like being a cyclist as a little kid. You ride your bike around for a while, and then suddenly maybe someone says, I didn't know you were a cyclist. Well, the little kid just started riding a bike. He didn't know he was a cyclist either. And I guess my story is probably the same way. I sort of just look back on it and think that my first sort of step in being an entrepreneur was looking at an opportunity and seizing it. And in my case, it was as a kid who liked to take photographs. And I had an opportunity at school to do with yearbooks and those kind of things. And then I realized there was an opportunity with the local newspaper in the small town that I grew up in. And things kind of sprung from there. And so to me, it was this identifying of opportunities and then acting on it. And that, to me, sort of is maybe the start of being an entrepreneur. And it can grow in all kinds of different directions from there. It certainly has for me, and I'm sure for anyone else starting this, they look at things perhaps the same way, that it's first identifying opportunities and then working ahead from there.
And can you make a distinction between the idea of an because there's opportunities, and then there's this confluence of opportunity and solving a problem at the same time? Was that part of it? Like, was that part of your inherent skill, is that you're like, oh, there's this opportunity and they have this problem, I can help solve it? Like, was that part of the thinking?
Well, you know, I think people perhaps inherently in life look at different opportunities, and some people look at it in terms of maybe furthering their academic careers or their social life, anything like that. In terms of the business opportunity, usually I think it's probably seizing on a need, looking at something that's not being served currently, or is there an opportunity to provide, in a business sense, a product or a service? So that would probably be the initial stage. And then it's a matter of assembling your talents and your resources to say, okay, how can I optimize and take advantage of that opportunity?
Okay, so take us through then your journey as an entrepreneur and some of the opportunities that were in front of you. Because I think part of it too is, if the opportunity is there, you also have to seize it. And I know that is part of your story. So you were taking photographs, and you got involved in the local paper. Pick up from there and talk to us about some of the opportunities that came in front of you and how that sculpted your journey.
Well, just going back to the photography for a moment, yes, I saw or had an interest in photography. Then there was an opportunity in high school to contribute photographs to the yearbook. It seemed then that there were things that were happening in the high school that were of interest to the newspaper. And going way back in time, we're now talking into the late 1960s, the newspaper was happy to pay me the princely sum of $5 for a photograph. And soon it turns out that people would call the newspaper because they were interested in getting a photograph or purchasing one that had been in the newspaper, or they had an assignment where a photographer was needed. So quickly the newspaper started calling me to do the photographs. And then one day someone called and said, do you do weddings and wedding photography? And again, I saw that as an opportunity, but I didn't know the first thing about it. So I went to different relatives and looked at their wedding photography books and said, I think I can do this. And through another friend, I found out how to acquire photo albums and that sort of thing. And again, the opportunity on the very first wedding was, it happened to be one that was being televised. And so suddenly people saw me and said, I didn't know you did weddings. Well, of course, I could legitimately say I did, because I just finished one. So that led into all kinds of wedding photography. Then there were opportunities at a nearby resort to do photographs for conventions. So that kind of grew the photography thing. And I did that for quite a number of years, actually, right through my late 20s. But then I realized there were other opportunities in the community, and the travel industry seemed to be really ramping up at that point, particularly with the low-cost charter airlines that were coming out at that time. So there was an opportunity for a travel agency, which had a springboard into the bus business, which I was able to purchase into. And on I've gone from there, I guess, the busing being one of the larger ones, with school buses and charter buses. But then along the way, there were different real estate opportunities, different other merchant banking opportunities. And again, it came to be a question of managing time and managing resources. But there was that insatiable desire to realize on opportunities within certain limits, of course. And one of the limits I imposed on myself was trying to go for a balance of life. We've often heard of these people that get so involved in business that they don't think about anything else, and they neglect family and friends and all the rest of it. So I realized that, wait a minute, balance is really important. So I kind of throttled back a little bit on the business end of things to make sure that I had a balance of, you know, family and relationship, friends, spirituality, all the kind of things that I think help make you a balanced person. So it's one of the interesting things that comes up with all these opportunities for entrepreneurship is knowing when to go forward, when to stand still, and when to throttle back.
Yeah, and there's so many places that I want to go with that answer. I will say from a balanced perspective, you emulated that when I was a kid. We would come home, we'd get on a bike, we'd go for a ride. You were 100% present while we were hanging out together. You weren't distracted. You didn't have a BlackBerry. This was pre-cell phone era, but you were also totally there. And it's interesting. And I talk a lot about legacy and health legacy. And that's something that I've been able to transfer to my kids is when I'm there, I'm there. And that started because you demonstrated that for me. You had a lot of things that you talked about in terms of resources and certainly opportunities. One thing I think that is quite interesting is that when you talked about taking on this role, doing wedding photography, and you said, sure, I'll do a wedding. There's this thing that we call imposter syndrome, and it's more prevalent for women than it is for men, where we feel like we have to have tons and tons of experience in a field before we can say that we do something. And what I'm hearing you say is that at some point you just kind of have to dig deep and find some raw confidence and deliver and seize the moment and seize what's been handed to you. How much of what you have done would you attribute to your capacity to find your inner confidence?
You know, being an entrepreneur is interesting. I think you need an inner confidence in terms of what you're doing. At the same time, the big danger is being overconfident, just thinking that perhaps because I have an education, you know, in business or whatever, that therefore I know all the answers, or because someone might have said, gee, I think you're fairly bright, that you can go ahead and do some of these things. I think you, first of all, have to have a confidence in yourself that you maybe can solve things, but an overconfidence would be just an absolute enemy in this situation, because I think you can get yourself into lots and lots of difficulties moving forward if, in fact, you cannot look at the risks that are involved. And also if you might lack the discipline or the focus to move forward. So it's kind of a balancing point. But I think to getting back to your core question about inner confidence, I think people should have that. I mean, looking at people in your profession, they're very well qualified in terms of their naturopathic ability and perhaps much more. And yes, there's a learning curve in terms of learning about business. But I think I don't think people should hold back thinking that just because of their gender that should hold them back. I've never really thought about it as being one gender over another. I think it's just plain as equal. And yet I recognize, excuse me, very clearly that there are still some prejudices that exist out in the world, and there are some obstacles that can be thrown in your way based on people's prejudice. But I don't think for a moment that should hold anyone back from moving forward and deal with the obstacles if they exist when you get there.
Yeah, no, I listen, I kind of get that too. Quick question for you, because this is a point of differentiation on this confidence piece. Are you a perfectionist?
Inherently, yes, I'm a perfectionist, but I realize that I have to temper that in a lot of ways. And I will be the first to admit that one of the areas that I tempered that was in raising a child. Everything doesn't work out perfectly. The house cannot look perfect at all times. Carrying that into a business environment, things can't be perfect there. But striving for a certain level of perfection is probably a good thing. But I realize I have to let my guard down in many areas. But yet there's still that, perfectionist trait. And so I tend to exhibit that, but exhibit that maybe more in things like hobbies that I'm involved with. And let that perfectionist trait be managed, because I think it can help you in some ways, and I think it can hurt you in others.
Yeah, it is such a good point. So I'm reading this book right now called The Confidence Code, and they're talking about perfectionism as one of the key differentiators between men's confidence and women's confidence and women's need for things to be perfect before they step into those new opportunities. So I think that that is just such a great commentary on how to harness a tendency towards perfectionism, but appreciating that it can get, it can also step in the way of those opportunities that are in front of you. What other skills do you naturally have that you think make you a successful entrepreneur?
Well, we talked about this sense of identifying opportunities. I think that a person must be enthusiastic about things when they move forward in optimizing or attempting to deal with those opportunities. I think certainly some business education is really essential. You and I have talked a number of times about, I guess, the business end of things. And that's something we've always talked about kind of over the kitchen table, which is probably a fair bit of your education or initial education in business. I tend to think that having empathy towards others, ability to get along with others and to manage the different components of business are important. Because when you start looking in those aspects, there's the usual business disciplines like, you know, marketing, finance, accounting, personnel, all those kind of things. But then there's the other aspects that are really, I think, equally important, or perhaps more important in some cases. You know, your ability to manage risk, your ability to negotiate, your standards of discipline, your standards and desire for focus. So there are a whole bunch of human elements that I think come into there. I try to hone those as well as I can. And I think even at my age of 67, I'm still learning. I think we're always learning in terms of how to manage ourselves and to develop our skills even more.
Where did you learn those skills? Was that something that you learned in business school, or was that something that you just consciously curated over time? Where did they come from?
They came from a variety of areas. There's no question that business school really helped me hone the aspects of business like marketing, finance, and so on. I think perhaps parental time myself was important growing up, learning good things and bad things. I think I've learned a fair bit as well in terms of business and in life by making mistakes. The mistakes I've made, I try to learn from those. And Lord knows I've made lots of mistakes, so hopefully I've learned a fair bit, but there's an awful lot that has slipped away as well. So I think we end up being a student of life in many ways. We're constantly learning, and it can come from all kinds of sources, formal education, friends, neighbors, experiences. It all goes together, and it's a package, and I think that's what makes each of us unique, and it's what helps us attack different and seize different opportunities in different ways because we have a combined variety of skills that we bring together. And that's perhaps what makes entrepreneurship rather exciting because nobody's skills are identical.
What skill was it that you found most challenging as you were moving through your journey? What was one where you consciously went, I got to master this because it's not something that's natural to me?
I think there were different skills at different times. One of the biggest skills that I think carries on even today is the management of time. You and I have even talked about that quite recently, that, you know, when we look at what our biggest resources are, the biggest resource is probably our time and how do we allocate that time? When you, for example, were very young, I was very conscious of not staying at the office beyond a certain point, and I always wanted to be there for you when you were out of school and also would be there for you when you left for school. So there was this incredible management of time. And I think that lesson is carried on all throughout business because there's a temptation to get carried away into things that you either really like or the demands of others that can drag you away from the original goals. And so management of time, I think, is probably the biggest thing from that learning curve. But along the way, you know, there's so many other things have come up. It's hard to mention.
Yeah, I agree. Time is, it's my biggest day-to-day challenge. Absolutely. Yeah, it's certainly something that I struggle with. You know, if I'm honest, I would say there's always been a bit of entrepreneur in me, but then I know that you carefully and intentionally guided me in that direction or facilitated those skills. What was your strategy and what were some of the things that you intentionally threw on the table for me to explore?
I don't think I intentionally threw anything on the table until I realized that you had an aptitude and an interest in things that were entrepreneurial. For example, if you had had an interest in piano or, let's say, horseback riding or any of those things, I probably would have encouraged you even more. Incidentally, you did try those kinds of things and you didn't have a huge interest in them, which is fine. There are so many choices out there. But in terms of business opportunities, you were really exposed to it, I suppose, around the kitchen table, because that was part of my life and we would tend to talk about that. I think also because you were an only child, you were exposed more to an adult world. So you became involved in more of those conversations at a younger age. But when you expressed an interest in things like that, and when you expressed an interest even in negotiating different things, which a lot of kids are involved with negotiating
things. All four-year-olds do.
Yeah, no kidding. But you took it to a higher level at different times, and I can think of specific instances when we were somewhere and you said, "Dad, why don't we go back? I think we could maybe offer a different price or something, and we might just get that." And I thought, "Oh, wait a minute, she's got some skills that are emerging here." So when those skills look like they were something you really wanted to pursue, then I think I was quite happy to expose them to you. At the same time, I didn't want to ram them down your throat. In terms of family business, for example, I didn't want to be one that really channeled you into succeeding in the family business and participating. I wanted to give you an opportunity to give it a shot, see if you liked it. But beyond that, I wasn't going to push anything because it was your life. And I appreciate the fact that you tried it over a couple of summers and said, "You know, it's okay, Dad, but I think my passion is really in the naturopathic end of life, and I'd like to pursue that." And I don't think I pushed it at all after that. I've really simply laid out the opportunity. And I think for many parents, that can be the situation as well. You lay out a number of opportunities to your kids, see what they're interested in, and hopefully as a good parent, you can give them more of the opportunities to do that. In the case of an entrepreneur, you know, lots of people can come from a family that's not entrepreneurial. I mean, in your case, you came from a family where we've gone through quite a number of generations of being entrepreneurs, business owners, and it just became part of a way of life for us. But I think equally well, I think people that come from a family, I'll just use school teachers as an example. Just because your parents were involved with school teaching and so on, it doesn't mean that you have to follow that route. And so I think as parents, it's rather interesting to see where your kids' interest levels are, and it may not be something that you're at all familiar with. And your case is a classic. I mean, I didn't know anything about naturopathic medicine until you said you had an interest in it. So then I went and actually consulted with a naturopathic doctor for an assessment, just to learn a bit more about it and ask a whole lot of questions so I could keep up and be supportive of the direction that you wanted to go.
And your life has never been the same.
Thank you, Dr. Killjoy. There were so many foods I used to enjoy eating, and I've learned that I should not enjoy eating those foods any longer.
Oh, we digress.
Oh, yes, on purpose.
You know, every generation of parents thinks that it's different for them. Do you think that this is a new era of entrepreneurism?
I think there's some aspects of entrepreneurship that are remarkably different now. For example, in terms of the financial resources to do things, before the advent of internet and so on, whoever heard of crowdfunding? What a phenomenal way to attract funds to get into business. I think in some ways there are so many new opportunities now in fields that didn't even exist before. And I'll just talk about technology, that the explosion in technology has given many more opportunities. On the other hand, the absolute speed of information flowing through the internet is probably making it more competitive. So it's a double-edged sword, but it's certainly an exciting time for entrepreneurs. And I must admit that when I look at different opportunities that I see coming by in business, just from, you know, reading the Globe every day or talking to people, in some ways, I wish that I wasn't in retirement and enjoying other aspects of my life, that, because there are so many neat opportunities that are out there. And some of them are harder for a point of entry, and others are easier.
If you had unlimited energy, because you actually took the supplements I recommended, and unlimited time, where would you be like, listen, I'll take on this project for the next 3 years, or I would really love to explore X, Y, or Z with respect to opportunities that are out there? Is there something that just like is really fascinating to you?
Well, I don't have anything that's a burning desire right now, other than from a business point of view, although I certainly could very quickly ramp up some interest in land development and things like that. Right now, it's interesting that from an entrepreneur's point of view, I'm happy to explore some opportunities that exist just in terms of helping others, getting involved with charitable actions and so on that could use some entrepreneurial skills applied to them. I mean, one of the projects I'm working on right now has to do with some museum development. And, you know, I think it takes an entrepreneurial skill set, if you will, to make some of these things happen. Yes, I guess there are some things that I would do, and I guess I am doing them, but I'm just not pursuing a full-time business career because I'm conscious of age and health and all the different things that go together. But I think at this stage of life, again, from a balancing point of view, it's nice to be applying those skills in a social setting as opposed to a making money setting.
Yeah, and I think that's such a good point, because it's easy to look at entrepreneurism or business and say, oh, this is just about making money. But that's never been your MO. It has always been something that has enabled more time or enabled contribution. And I think that's just such an important lesson and lens that I've been given that I can continue to share with my kids, but it's a lens that I carry through all of my endeavors as well, that there has to be a balance between the two of those.
Yeah. And to your credit, I think that shows. So well done.
Yeah. I have a propensity towards not-for-profit, despite being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, get over it.
It's my natural skill set. Okay. So not to put you on the spot, but you have taught me an immeasurable amount about being an entrepreneur. What have I taught you about health?
You've taught me, for example, that if I can encapsulate it very quickly, that food is fuel. I think there's a tendency as life goes on and we end up with a little more time and sometimes a little more money, that we end up altering our diet in a way that isn't perhaps as healthy as it might be. And right now there's a huge amount of knowledge that's around and a lot of new knowledge in terms of what's healthy and what's the proper way of eating and conducting your life. You've at least exposed me to what I should be doing. To my chagrin, you remind me altogether too often about that. Hence, that's why I call you Dr. Killjoy. So yeah, you've taught me much more about what I should be eating and what I should not be eating. I do slide off the wagon, but generally speaking, I think because of my awareness, I am slightly better or maybe significantly better than I have been. So that's probably the biggest thing, I think, of what you've imparted to me in terms of health.
Okay. And a question I ask everybody, how would you define health?
Quickly, I guess, in my mind, the term wellness comes into that and well-being. So health seems to take all kinds of dimensions, whether it be exercise, stress management, diet, they all kind of come together under the banner of health. And I'm sure you would add more than the three that I've just mentioned, but those are the three that have quickly come to mind in terms of health.
Well, and that's the beauty of it, is that there's no right or wrong answer, and it has a different meaning for everybody. And it's nice to actually hear a perspective from someone who isn't in the healthcare paradigm the same way. I value that tremendously. each month I'm featuring a new Anthropology quiz to help you unlock and uncover some of the physical performance blocks that may be holding you back from your true potential. With spring in the air, we are focusing on detox and toxicity. Through the quiz, we're going to help you understand whether you possibly have exposures you didn't even think you were having, and how to tell whether or not your body is better or worse than the average person at being able to remove these things from your immediate environment. To learn more or to take the quiz, head on over to MeganWalker.com/Anthropology quiz. So what we're going to do now is we're going to move on to the second part of the interview. And I call this the KPIs or key performance indicators. So just like we would have those in any business or startup, I think we also have them with respect to our health and lifestyle. So these are rapid fire questions. And I ask them of all of my guests, and you can't escape that just because we're related. So here we go. My first question to you. Do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share it?
Yes, I have, especially in retirement, I have a consistent morning routine. And it involves getting out of bed and doing certain stretching exercises that are just plain good for my back. Then turning on the coffee pot for that morning cup of coffee. I quite like roasting my own beans, as you know, and making a really good tasting cup of coffee while I devour the Globe and Mail from cover to cover. That seems to me to be a real luxury. In my working life, I was able to scan the globe perhaps quickly before I left for work. But one of the joys of retirement is being able to go cover to cover and enjoy a cup of coffee at the same time. Then move on to the shower and getting ready for the different aspects or activities that I've planned for that day.
All right. Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
Right now, I'm reading a book called The Inconvenient Indian by Thomas King. That was quite a bestseller dealing with the misconceptions and the accounting of Native North Americans. I just find that that's quite a sociological challenge all over North America, and in fact, in lots of other parts of the world. And Thomas King's approach to that using a factual basis for it is really an interesting book at this stage. But I tend to balance my reading as well. Again, this discipline of life thing can be an enemy some days, but I read less fiction than I do nonfiction. And I try to balance it throughout the year as some business books, some non-business books, just a variety of disciplines. I quite like biographies, for example. So that's my approach to reading right now.
What's your favorite biography you've ever read?
Ooh, I wasn't expecting that one.
I wasn't expecting to ask it.
All right, that sounds good. There's been some great Canadian biographies that I've read. I've been interested, actually, and I'm not a big fan, as you know, of Pierre Trudeau the senior, but I certainly have enjoyed reading different biographies about him to understand where he came from and why he did what he did and all the rest of it. So that's one that stands out. Although I enjoyed one quite recently dealing with Gordon Pinsent, the actor, because, again, another very interesting, charismatic Canadian figure. And it was interesting to read his story from very humble beginnings and his many challenges and reading about his many successes.
Yeah, I'm going to go on a side note, only because I get to do this when I interview my dad. When I was a kid, you would always talk about reading biographies. And I always thought, I can't, like, how boring is reading a biography? I had zero interest. And then as I, dare I say, older, more experienced, perhaps, they're kind of a genre of choice at this point. I'm fascinated by other people's lives and the choices and opportunities that they were able to capitalize upon. So thanks for sharing that, that love of biographies with me. What do you do for fun or play?
As you know, my biggest passion for fun is being on the water. I enjoy being on the water, whether it be a canoe, a powerboat, a sailboat. There's something almost therapeutic about being on the water, and yet there's a certain adventure of being on the water, combined with the fact that I have a tremendous fear of the water and a respect for the water. So that's probably one of my larger areas in terms of fun things to do. And yet, like most retired people, I like a certain amount of golf and I certainly like traveling. I think we're in such a fortunate generation where we can travel the world relatively inexpensively and relatively easily due to the airlines that, for example, you can reach from Toronto anywhere in the world in a day. And so between those are the major components, I think, of my leisure time right now and my hobbies.
And my last question for you, entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I guess I'm going to say yes to both. I think when you're born that way, you have a natural inclination for it and an interest and an aptitude. But at the same time, I think you can hone any kind of skills that you have through education. And education could be formal education through, you know, the usual university or college routes, or it can be just in your exposure with others. But I think a person has to really understand, if they're not have a natural aptitude towards it, that there's more than just business, finance, and so on, that there's this whole question of risk management, negotiations, discipline, and focus, which are essential for any aspect of life. But there is something intangible as well about a true entrepreneur. So there's perhaps different levels of entrepreneurship that a person can explore. And we've seen people that are very successful, for example, as small business owners. And then we see other examples of entrepreneurs like Elon Musk, the founder of Tesla, and the space activities that he's done, who seems to be an entrepreneur of a totally different level. So again, I think my answer was yes to your questions of either or, but I think it's a matter of picking the level of entrepreneurship that you perhaps want to pursue, and away you go.
Dad, I can't thank you enough for doing this. This was such an enlightening interview. I have to say, some of your answers surprised me, and I got things out of it I wasn't even expecting. So let's plan this again sometime soon.
I look forward to it. Great to chat with you this way as well as in person.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.